UU News. UU News is reported and written by Donald E. Skinner, Jane Greer, and other UU World writers, and published weekly at uuworld.org. Contact world@uua.org or call 617-948-4693. Major Changes Proposed for GA by Donald E. Skinner, 1-11-10. General Assembly, the annual gathering of thousands of Unitarian Universalists, may be about to undergo some dramatic changes. Those changes could include holding GA every other year, reducing the number of authorized delegates from around 5,000 to 2,000, and subsidizing delegates. These changes are some of the proposals included in the final report of the Fifth Principal Task Force, commissioned by the UUA's Board of Trustees in October 2007. The task force is named for the UUA's fifth principal, which affirms the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. The 13-page report says that GA is dramatically broken in four ways. Delegates do not represent their congregations and are not accountable to them. Only delegates with the financial means to attend GA are able to do so. GA is a major expense for the UUA, and GA as it exists now is not congruent with policy governance, the UUA's newly adopted system of governance. The task force report says, "The future of our UU movement can ill afford to continue the ways of faux democracy and unaccountable representation that have characterized associational governance, including the content and process of General Assembly. The task force believes that the status quo for General Assembly is not an option." The Board of Trustees discussed the report at its January meeting in San Antonio, Texas. The board planned to adopt a resolution about GA changes and other governance reforms in a conference call in February. The board held its January meeting as this issue was going to press. For full coverage, see uuworld.org. Several key recommendations would require bylaw changes to take effect. The task force offered two scenarios for a reformed GA. In the first scenario, a much smaller delegate assembly focused on governance and congregational leaders would be held every other year over 2.5 days in August. In the second, a 2-day conference with programming similar to GA's current mix would precede or follow the weekend delegate assembly. Joe Sullivan, task force chair, said the task force interviewed leaders of four other denominations and found that all held biennial or triennial assemblies, and that three had ended the practice of annual assemblies in the past decade. "Every denominational leader we talked with told us how big a change this was for them," he said. "They also said to a person that they would not go back to annual meetings." Sullivan added, "The feedback from UUs has been largely favorable for moving to a biennial meeting. Those who have the greatest concerns about it are young people. 2 years can be a long time to a youth or young adult. There is also a fear we'll lose a sense of energy that we get with our annual meetings." Sullivan said the task force was primarily focused on envisioning a more democratic delegate assembly and did not try to work out what non-business parts of a revamped GA might look like. The task force proposed limiting the number of delegates to approximately 2,000. Each congregation would be represented by one lay delegate and one settled minister, while congregations with more than 250 members would send more delegates. 100 at-large delegates would be selected, 20 from each of 5 regions. But some current delegates, including UUA trustees, additional parish ministers, and ministers emeriti and emeriti, would no longer have delegate status. General Assembly costs about $1.1 million annually, including the budget for the planning staff. Jan Snegas, director of the UUA's General Assembly and Conference Planning Office, said GA has always been organized to break even each year. In the past 10 years, it has had deficits in only 2 years, 2005 in Fort Worth, Texas, and 2008 in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Shifting from an annual assembly to a biennial one could actually cost the UUA significantly more money if delegates received subsidies. The cost of a fully subsidized delegate assembly would be $2.32 million, the task force estimates. If that cost was offset by 3,000 non-delegates who registered for a program assembly, revenue of $1,050,000, the UUA would still need to come up with $1.27 million more. Under the task force's proposals, GA would no longer be set up to break even. The proposed changes are focused instead on increasing GA's economic accessibility, Snegass said. The task force is proposing a way to improve governance through increasing economic accessibility by subsidizing attendance of delegates, she said. The costs would, however, be spread across 2 years. Would delegates vote for biennial GAs if that proposal were presented to them? No one knows, said Denise Davidoff, task force member and former UUA moderator, in a December interview. I do know that if we are not going to take the role of congregations and the governance of our own association of congregations very seriously, then we will likely adversely impact the future health of the association. Corder noted that almost any change to GA would require a 2-year vote. That means delegates would need to come both years knowing how their congregations feel about the issue, not simply voting their best guess. She added, I hope congregations take this up, and rather than people having discussions about what their individual GA experience would be, I hope the discussions are about what's best for our congregations. See UUWorld.org for extended coverage, including a link to the task force report. Schedule Rearranged for 2010 GA by Donald Skinner, 1-11-10. The schedule of this year's General Assembly, to be held June 23rd through 27th in Minneapolis, Minnesota, has been changed. Usually, after the opening ceremony on Wednesday night, the schedule proceeds with both workshops and business sessions, plenaries, every day, until Sunday's closing ceremony. This year, no workshops will be held on the weekend. They have all been moved to Thursday and Friday. Saturday and Sunday have been given over primarily to plenaries, with 2 long ones each day. Jan Snegass, director of the UUA's General Assembly and Conference Services Office, said that holding plenaries on the weekend gives delegates a chance to participate in more of the business sessions without having to take extra days off from work. The new schedule will save the UUA between $30,000 and $50,000 by not having to pay for room rental and audiovisual setup for rooms that will not be used for workshops on the weekend. Film shares UU Dad's adoption story by Michelle Bates Deacon, 12/28/09. In one of the opening scenes of the documentary film Preacher's Sons, Stillman Stewart sits by a Los Angeles pool with his husband, Greg Stewart. The two white men watch their sons splash in the water, 5 boys of color who call out Papa and Daddy to Stillman and Greg. Stillman laughs and recounts a conversation he's just overheard between 2 older women at the pool who were observing their family. Uh-oh, one woman said. There must be something wrong here. Preacher's Sons follows the untraditional Stewart family for 5 years through 4 cities. Despite what the women by the pool thought, the film depicts the Stewarts as doing something very right, giving permanent, loving homes to at-risk, hard-to-place children lost in the foster care system. Between 2000 and 2002, the Reverend Greg Stewart, senior minister of the First Unitarian Universalist Society of San Francisco, and Stillman Stewart, a former social worker and now at-home parent, adopted 5 sons through the California foster care system. Their story attracted the attention of several television networks who approached them about filming their family. The Stewarts always refused these requests. Things changed, however, when they were approached by 2 members of the neighborhood Unitarian Universalist Church in Pasadena, California, where Greg was serving as Minister of Religious Education. The Stewarts didn't believe the networks shared their mission of promoting the adoption of at-risk children. However, they trusted fellow church members and husband and wife filmmakers Mark Neely and C. Roebuck Reed. "We knew we had a very special story, but the reason we share it is to expose people to the foster care crisis in America and to encourage people of liberal faith to act on their beliefs," said Greg. More than 510,000 children are in foster care in the United States, according to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and more than 120,000 children await adoptions. Neely and Reed began filming the Stewart family in 2002. Neely's background was in film editing and directing. Reed is a writer trained as a cultural anthropologist. Greg Stewart describes their decision to become involved in the lives of at-risk children as a calling that began when he was in divinity school at the University of Chicago and Stillman was a social worker helping at-risk youth. The film recounts how each boy came to Greg and Stillman between 2000 and 2002. First came Alan, a 3-year-old African-American. He had been born 3 weeks premature with fetal alcohol syndrome and a cocaine addiction. David came next. Alan's biological brother, he had been abandoned at the hospital after birth. He joined the Stewart family at 2.5 weeks. At nearly the same time David joined them, Arthur came too, aged 7. A Latino boy, Arthur had 15 previous foster placements and 3 failed adoptions, as well as a history of abuse and neglect. Then another pair of brothers arrived. Javante, 7, and Deontay, 6, had been in 12 previous placements. Neither boy was toilet trained or could use silverware to eat. As they filmed, Neely and Reed watched the family come together and saw the children change. "You can see the transformation of the children unfold before your eyes," said Reed. "That is the power of love." Reed released Preacher's Sons in the summer of 2009. Neely had completed the editing of the film in late 2007, but 4 months after finishing the film, he died of a recurrence of cancer. Reed put the release and distribution on hold while she and her family mourned. This fall, Reed began a road trip to screen the film. She allows churches to show the film for free if they allow her to come and sell it on DVD. Churches or groups interested in screening Preacher's Sons can contact Reed through the film's website, www.preacherssons.com. UUSC Raises Funds for Haitian Relief, by Donald Skinner, 114-10. The UU Service Committee and the UUA have created a fund to support relief efforts after the January 12th earthquake in Haiti. UUSC fund information is at www.uusc.org/Haiti Earthquake, including a secure link for credit card donations. Contributions may also be sent to UUSC/UUA Haiti Earthquake Relief Fund, Post Office Box 844001, Boston, Massachusetts, 02284-4001. 10-year-old UU refuses to stand for pledge, by Donald Skinner, 112309. When 10-year-old Will Phillips of West Fork, Arkansas, found a principle he couldn't stand up for, he sat down, and the repercussions from that action spread across the country. On Monday, October 5th, Will, whose family attends the UU Fellowship of Fayetteville, Arkansas, refused to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance in his fifth grade classroom at school. In Will's own words, at the end of the pledge it says liberty and justice for all, but there isn't justice for people who are gay, and there's a lot of racism and sexism still, and there are lots of people who can't get health care. So Will decided he wasn't going to stand during the pledge until it represented everyone, and since October 5th, he hasn't. When Will's mother, Laura Phillips, posted about this on Facebook, several of her friends alerted the news media. Appearing on CNN on November 16th, Will said, "I've grown up with a lot of people and good friends that are gay. I think they should have the rights all people should." UUA's insurance plan offers new benefits. By Jane Greer, 11-16-09. The UUA continues to expand the benefits of its self-funded health insurance plan for church employees, ministers, and UUA staff. In 2010, the plan will cover diagnostic tests. In 2009, the plan began covering mental health claims at the same rate as any other medical claim. In 2008, a comprehensive eye exam was added and covered outpatient mental health visits increased from 20 to 40 per year. The total number of enrollees in the plan now stands at 745 UUA and congregational employees with 500 dependents, according to Katie McDonald, the UUA's human resources manager. Based on a comprehensive survey of UU professional groups, Jim Sargent, the health plan's director, estimates that the plan has offered insurance to around 300 of the original 400 ministers and congregational employees who had no or inadequate coverage. At the plan's start, part-time church employees could qualify for coverage if they worked 1,000 hours a year. In 2008, that number was reduced to 750 to allow more employees to participate. The industry standard is 1,000, Sargent said. UU ministers liked the plan's portability. Formerly, many ministers would find coverage in the area they were serving and then have to get new insurance when they moved. The plan also enables churches to take better care of employees. The Reverend Richard Nugent, head of the UUA's Office of Church Staff Finances, said it was part of his job to encourage churches to become more responsible employers. "Now that we have the health plan going, we're keeping folks informed about being responsible employers and paying 80% of the cost, which is standard." CSW drafts new peacemaking statement. By Eric Furstman, 12-14-09. The UUA's Commission on Social Witness has revised the draft statement of conscience on peacemaking that the 2009 General Assembly sent back for refinement. The earlier draft, which came before the General Assembly for a vote in June 2009, was criticized by pacifists as being too militant and by just war advocates as being too pacifist, according to David May, Commission Chair. The new document tries to reflect current Unitarian Universalist attitudes toward peace. The first draft, presented at the 2009 General Assembly, read, "In this statement of conscience, we reject war as inconsistent with our theological principles and religious values, with the exceptions of self-defense and the use of force for humanitarian purposes." The revised version offers a different view, affirming the right of individuals and nations to self-defense and humanitarian aid, but goes on to say, "Some of us believe that these can be done without the use of lethal force. Others believe lethal force is sometimes necessary." The Commission on Social Witness is the elected body that coordinates the General Assembly's social witness resolution process. Statements of conscience are developed by the Commission and adopted by the General Assembly as part of a 4-year process. Congregational study action issues are selected by the General Assembly every other year, and congregations are given resource materials to educate themselves. The Commission then formulates a statement with input from congregations. If 25% of certified congregations vote to put the revised draft on the GA agenda by February 1st, delegates will take a final vote at GA in June 2010. UU Minister Nominated for Grammy by Michelle Bates Deacon, 12/14/09. The Reverend Dan Schatz, minister of the Bucksmont Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Warrington, Pennsylvania, received a nomination for a 2010 Grammy Award for his work co-producing Singing Through the Hard Times, a tribute to Utah Phillips, in the category of Best Traditional Folk Album. The two-CD set, which features performances by Pete Seeger, Annie DeFranco, Tom Paxton, Emmylou Harris, Schatz, and other musicians, celebrates the music of Utah Phillips, an iconic folk singer and storyteller, and also a Unitarian Universalist, who died in May 2008. A folk singer himself, Schatz conceived of the project as a way to honor and raise money for Phillips, who was suffering from congestive heart failure. He proposed the idea to his fellow musicians Kendall and Jackie Morse, and the three became co-producers of the project. The executive producer of the 39-song album is recording artist Annie DeFranco, whose Righteous Babe record label released the album in February 2009. All proceeds from Singing Through the Hard Times are donated to Phillips's family. Bruce Utah Phillips was a fixture on the folk singing circuit from the late 1960s until his death. His songs and stories were both political and humorous. Phillips had served for 3 years in the Korean War. His disillusionment with the war turned him into a pacifist and an anarchist. When he returned to the United States, he became a hobo, riding trains, and began to craft his talents as a singer and storyteller. Phillips joined the Industrial Workers of the World, or Wobblies, Union, and became an outspoken labor advocate. After losing a bid for the U.S. Senate on the Peace and Freedom ticket in 1968, Phillips devoted himself to folk singing. Phillips belonged to the UU community of the mountains near his home in Nevada City, California. Congregations Observe Climate Action Day by Donald Skinner, 11/2/09. First Parish in Cambridge, Massachusetts, was one of more than 100 UU congregations that participated in the October 24th International Day of Climate Action, sponsored by the climate change organization 350.org. First Parish members, joined by a number of Harvard University students, gathered at the church with stepladders and rolls of plastic film to insulate the historic building's drafty windows to reduce heat loss. At 1 p.m., children rang the church bell 350 times. The organization, 350.org, is committed to educating politicians and others about the fact that the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere must be limited to 350 parts per million to avoid runaway climate change. It is now at 390 parts per million. The organization said there were more than 5,200 events in 181 countries on October 24th, constituting the most widespread day of environmental action in the planet's history. The UU Church of Arlington, Virginia, used the day to launch its Anything But Single Occupancy carpooling program. The UU Fellowship of Falmouth in East Falmouth, Massachusetts, held a dinner honoring local environmentalists. At the UU Church in Meriden, Connecticut, members and volunteers planted 350 daffodil bulbs. In Sierra Vista, Arizona, members of the UU Church of Southeastern Arizona participated in an event that included cooking a pot of soup with a solar cooker to 350 degrees. "This is only the beginning," said Rowan Van Ness, Program Associate for Environmental Justice with the UU Ministry for Earth. "This is a great time to be getting engaged in this," she said. "We hope people will continue to write to their senators and to educate their communities through letters to the editor and other means." Gay Marriage Bill Signed in Church by Jane Greer, 122109. History was made Friday, December 18th, when Washington, D.C. Mayor Adrian M. Fenty signed a bill in the sanctuary of All Souls Church Unitarian legalizing same-sex marriage in the District of Columbia. The law was approved by the D.C. City Council December 15th. The Reverend Robert Hardies, senior minister at All Souls, is co-chair of D.C. Clergy United for Marriage Equality, one of the groups instrumental in securing the law's passage. I applaud Mayor Fenty and the D.C. Council for standing on the side of love and ending discrimination against gay and lesbian Washingtonians, he said in remarks during the signing ceremony. D.C. City Councilors Vincent Gray, Jim Graham, David Catania, and Phil Mendelson also spoke. When Fenty finished signing the document, a crowd of several hundred, including around 100 members of the All Souls congregation, erupted in cheers. UUMA Hires First Executive Director by Donald Skinner, 112309. The Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association, the professional organization for UU ministers, hired its first executive director as part of a new 5-year plan to increase educational opportunities for ministers and strengthen bonds among them. The plan was approved by the UUMA Executive Committee in January 2009 and was made possible by a dues restructuring that the membership approved this past June. On October 1st, the Reverend Don Southworth began serving as acting executive director. Southworth recently completed a term as secretary of the 10-member UUMA Executive Committee. His new responsibilities will include managing the development of a new 5-day retreat for ministers, the Center Institute for Excellence in Ministry, to be held every other year. The first one will be in February 2011 near Monterey, California. To support the new position and the increased educational opportunities, the UUMA membership approved a significant increase in members' annual dues. Transylvanian Church Gives Big Gift by Michelle Bates Deacon, 11909. Known for his eloquence, the Reverend Gary Smith, senior minister of First Parish in Concord, Massachusetts, is rarely speechless. But a surprise gift to the church presented during a September service left him momentarily without words. The people of Concord's partner church in Transylvania had pooled their meager resources to make a gift to the Massachusetts Church's capital campaign. In front of the congregation that Sunday in September, Smith opened a surprise envelope to reveal the amount, $10,500. "I was just floored," Smith said. "They live in what is mostly a barter economy, without a lot of cash. It's just stunning generosity." The Concord Church and the Congregation of Seike Kerestua have had a partnership lasting 2 decades. It began after Smith traveled to Romania in late 1989 with then-UUA President William Schultz. They were part of a delegation visiting the birthplace of Unitarianism after the fall of the repressive regime of Nicolae Ceausescu. Soon after the fall of Romanian communism in 1989, the founders of what would become the Unitarian Universalist Partner Church Council in 1993 formalized many partnerships between struggling Transylvanian Unitarian congregations and North American churches, including the one between Concord and Seike Kerestua. Over the past 20 years, members of each church have visited the other and established long-standing friendships. The Concord Church has provided the Transylvanian Church with financial aid, scholarships for its youth to attend the local Unitarian High School, and help with the physical labor of rebuilding its grounds. During the summer of 2009, First Parish member Roger Matledge, who had long been active in the Partner Church program, had been in Kerestua visiting with the Reverend Yosef Sombatfalvi. Sombat Falvey was troubled to hear that the Concord Church was struggling to meet the goals for its capital campaign to renovate and expand the church and its offices. Matledge recalls that Sombat Falvey thought about the issue for a few days and then told him, "We'd like to give a gift." When Matledge returned to Transylvania in September, Sombat Falvey revealed to him the size of the gift. "I had no idea it would be that much money," Matledge said. The Concord Church dedicated the patio that runs the length of the new religious education and office wing in honor of the Seke Kurestur congregation. Morales announces ministry review by Jane Greer, 10-26-09. President Peter Morales announced plans for a comprehensive review of the UU ministry at the October 2009 meeting of the UUA's Board of Trustees. Morales said the review, which will take a year to complete, will offer recommendations about where the UU ministry needs to head in the next 20 years. The review will incorporate reports from a broad variety of groups, including the UUA Ministry and Professional Leadership Staff Group, the UUA Identity-Based Ministry Staff Group, seminaries, and many others. Morales said the comprehensive review of the UU ministry was necessary, considering the changing demographics of the United States. "America is in the midst of a historic demographic shift," he wrote in an email to UU World. "Of Americans 70 years old and older, three-quarters are of European descent. The majority of Americans under 10 years old are not white. If we are to be a vital religious movement in this new America, we need to become a multicultural faith." At its October 14th through 18th, 2009 meeting in Boston, the board focused primarily on implementing policy governance, the new governance model it adopted last summer. Among other actions, the board agreed to focus on strengthening its relationship to the UUA's member congregations in the coming months, committing individual trustees to visit congregations in their districts between January and April 2010. The board also authorized a task force to examine the ways the UUA provides professional credentials to ministers, religious educators, and church musicians, appointed several trustees to help the board think about the lack of a national structure for developing youth leaders, and placed a change to the rules governing UUA elections on the 2010 General Assembly agenda. UUA Treasurer and Vice President of Finance Tim Brennan told the board that the UUA had met its operating budget for fiscal year 2009. "From an operating perspective, we did well," he said. "Our income was down, but we balanced the budget." The UUA's assets, however, declined in value from $178,726,000 in fiscal year 2008 to $143,578,000 in fiscal year 2009. The good news, however, is that the UUA's invested funds are regaining value. They had dropped from a high of $131 million in May 2008 to a low of $85 million in March 2009, but have rebounded to $111 million in September 2009. "We're stable," Brennan said. "Even with all those losses, the investment strategies we had were good compared to other groups. You want to be positioned so that you can benefit from the upturn, which we've done." In other business, the board agreed to hold its January 2010 meeting in San Antonio, Texas, proposed changing Rule G9.12.6, campaigns for elective office, in the UUA bylaws to allow the UUA to distribute statements from candidates for at-large positions electronically rather than on paper, a change that will require the approval of the 2010 General Assembly. Welcomed the San Gabriel UU Fellowship of Georgetown, Texas, as a new member congregation. Made numerous committee appointments and welcomed six new trustees: Donna Harrison from the Southwestern Conference, the Reverend Susan Ritchie from the Ohio Meadville District, Nancy Bartlett from the Mid-South District, the Reverend Jake Morrill from the Thomas Jefferson District, Lou Finney from the Mountain Desert District, and the Reverend Gene Pupke, trustee at large. More online. See UUWorld.org for coverage of the board's January 2010 meeting. Congregational News, compiled by Jane Greer. Submit news about your congregation. world@uua.org. 617-948-4693. Church's $600,000 gift to Aid Hungry. The Unitarian Universalist Congregation at Shelter Rock in Manhasset, New York, is giving $600,000 in grants to four nonprofit organizations working to end hunger on Long Island. Recipients include the Interfaith Nutrition Network, $225,000, Island Harvest, $150,000, Long Island Cares, the Harry Chapin Food Bank, $125,000, and the Long Island Council of Churches, $100,000. According to the Long Island News, 12-28-09, food pantries, soup kitchens, and other food programs on Long Island have experienced a 35% increase in the number of people seeking services in 2009. The Shelter Rock congregation is home to the UU Veach program, a philanthropic program that supports organizations that put UU values into action. The program was founded through a bequest from Carolyn Veach, who died in 1953. Selling treasures. First Parish Church in Beverly, Massachusetts, announced that it would be auctioning off its collection of antique silver tankards, beakers, plates, and mugs on January 21st to pay for church repairs and renovations. The centerpiece of the collection is a silver ewer made by Paul Revere, estimated to be worth between $200,000 and $300,000, according to Christie's in New York. The church has repainted its building, repaired its antique stained glass windows, fixed the roof, and insulated the walls. The Reverend Lynn Plum, interim minister, told the Boston Globe, "Even the people who were the saddest to see the collection leave understand that it had to happen." 12-25-09. Rice for Flood Victims. Members of the Doldol and Malingan UU congregations in the Philippines received aid, including donations of rice, from UUs around the world after two typhoons swept through the islands in September 2009, killing more than 300 people and leaving 300,000 homeless. According to the UUA's Advocacy and Witness Staff Group blog, uuasocialjustice.blogspot.com, the donors included the UUA, the International Council of Unitarians and Universalists, the UU Partner Church Council, Partner Church Congregations in the United States, and the Unitarian Church of Transylvania. 12-18-09. Martians at Christmas. The Unitarian Universalist Church of Minnetonka, Minnesota, added a new element to the traditional Christmas pageant: Martians. Church member Jeff Hatcher, who has written and produced four other plays for the church, wrote the 60-minute play Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, based on a 1964 movie with the same name. The cast featured 47 actors of all ages. Anniversaries. The Sanford, Maine Unitarian Universalist Church celebrated its centennial in 2009 with a series of events including a July 4th parade, a cemetery walk, a harvest dinner, a holiday craft fair, and a retro Christmas Eve service. Members of the Palomar Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Vista, California, marked their 50-year anniversary with a year-long celebration, holding an event each month. These included a concert, a Thanksgiving dinner in which some of the original members shared what Thanksgivings were like 50 years ago, and a program honoring people from each of the fellowship's five decades. The First Universalist Church of El Dorado, Ohio, recently celebrated its 100th anniversary in its current building with a special service featuring ministers who have served the church over the past 60 years. Meadville Lombard May Sell Campus by Michelle Bates Deacon, 11:30-09. Meadville Lombard Theological School, a Unitarian Universalist seminary, has announced plans to put its Chicago campus up for sale. The school is also entering into preliminary partnership talks with Andover Newton Theological School, a progressive Protestant seminary based in Newton, Massachusetts, which trains many students for Unitarian Universalist ministry. What that partnership ultimately will look like, indeed, whether it will happen at all, remain open questions. The presidents of both schools met for the first time in December and will be continuing talks. In early November, the Meadville Lombard Board of Trustees authorized the talks with Andover Newton. At the same time, the trustees also voted to authorize the sale of the school's Chicago campus near the University of Chicago. Among the trustees' goals in selling the campus are to provide the school with financial flexibility in approaching a possible partnership with another seminary, to fund Meadville Lombard's new educational model, and to get out from under the demands of deferred maintenance on the property. The Reverend Dr. Lee Barker, Meadville Lombard's president, said that there are already parties interested in buying the buildings. It's possible that a sale could include a leaseback provision for Meadville Lombard. Ideally, Barker said, the school will remain in Chicago. Andover Newton has already been engaged in talks with the leadership of Colgate Rochester Crozer Divinity School in Rochester, New York, and other seminaries about possible partnerships. On May 26, the Andover Newton Board of Trustees approved discussions with the Rochester School.